Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids.
I could do Stephen A's job, guys. It's not that hard.
Danny Parkins.
QB1 party. All are invited.
Host of Fox Sports 1's First Things First.
I'm on my 15th view of Ben Johnson's post-game speech. Do you want to hear it again?
Who wants one? Ready? Come on. Do it better, best.
Former host of 670 The Score before he abandoned us.
That's a Caleb Williams custom, baby.
Jersey number one is going to the Raptors.
You guys made it seem like as Chicago Bears fans, we had our guy, Danny Parkins, all these guys.
Danny Parkins on 670 The Score.
We go out to our Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. He joins us on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. Danny Parkins, you know him as our former afternoon host before he abandoned Robbie. We know Danny will join us. He's on the newly expanded First Things First from 4 to 5 on Fox Sports 1 and joins us now. Hey, Danny.
Hi. Good to, I mean, man, what a cast of characters. Marshall is back. Grody is gone. Layla is the bedrock. Layla is the consistent thing that we can rely on. And
wow.
So I'm happy to be here. Sorry, Marshall. I missed you last time. And I was like, oh, don't worry. Nothing's going on. It's just Cubs playoffs and Bears games and all that. It's okay. No big deal.
Well, and if you depends on who you ask, because people always say I'm never on the show, and Grody's usually at Hallis Hall on Wednesdays and Thursdays. So I just confess to not being the bedrock at all. So
okay, well, I will be here most Wednesdays.
Oh, so yeah, that's funny how that works. It's a one way street. Okay, I'm here most days. By the way, I rarely.
I'm sure you are. I'm sure you are. I'm just kidding, Marshall.
No, I know.
I'm not here right now. It's a figment of your imagination.
You know who is here, Danny? And I guess arrival is a thing we can talk about. Do you feel like Caleb Williams has arrived after that Monday night showdown with Jaden Daniels and the Bears winning a game on the road?
No, I don't. No. Like, I thought it's an interesting way you put that. Like, last week, I thought was like a coming out party arrival moment for Drake May, obviously in Caleb's draft class, had arguably the best game of his career, certainly given the national TV standalone game, big underdog against the Bills, won a division game, put them into first place. Like, to me, that was like Drake May's kind of coming out party. Caleb, I thought, was okay against the Commanders. I thought he had some nice moments. I thought it was nice that he drove the team down at the end of the game. I know Troy Aikman, and I'm sure we'll talk about it. Like, Troy Aikman took a lot of crap on social media for some of his tone on Caleb, but I thought some of the stuff that he was pointing out about how, like, he was misidentifying and not on the same page with his receivers on, like, man versus zone and if the receiver was going to sit or if he was going to keep running. Like, I thought that Aikman was kind of on it with that, especially early in the game. So, you know, I didn't think Caleb was at his best, but obviously if the touchdown to Odunze isn't taken off the board, if Zaccheaus catches that crosser over the middle on second down when they were backed up against their own three late in the game, I mean, he could have taken that 97 yards for a touchdown. Then it would have been like, oh, Caleb had three total touchdowns with 330 passing yards. Like, then it probably would have been viewed as his coming out party. But with some of the sloppiness, with the touchdown taken off the board, with the drop, I thought it was a fine game for him and a much better game and a much bigger game for Ben Johnson, frankly, than Caleb Williams.
Well, and that's the thing is I know you were looking at this game as the one you were looking forward to the most to try to see what you wanted to see in the team. So when you balance that part of it, too, is that a good thing that at least the coach came through in a way you wanted it to be?
Yeah, listen, that was to me the story of the game. Like, it was Like, would they look better out of the bye? And obviously, Caleb, I thought, was still inconsistent. The penalties were still infuriating. They got the plays in too late, I thought, sometimes. But, like, coming into the game, and Aikman even said it in the lead of the broadcast. He's like, you know, the Commanders rush defense and the Bears rush offense. That's a matchup for Washington. If the Bears are going to move the ball in this one, it's going to be through the air. And then DeAndre Swift had arguably his best game as a Bear. And coming into the game also, Washington was first in the NFL in yards per carry, and the Bears were last in the NFL in yards per carry against, and they did a really good job. Like, they held Washington to their worst rushing game of the season, and their run defense, I thought, was the best the Bears had played. It was the best the Bears had played in terms of yards per carry allowed. So, like, rush offense got better, rush defense got better, and then they won their second one-score game of the year, which, you know, when we came off the Matt Eberflus era, the Bears were 6-20 in one-score games over the 3 years that Eberflus was there. And they're 2-1 so far this year. So, like, figuring out a way to win a game that for my entire life watching the Bears, it feels like they always lose that game. I thought there were way more positives than negatives, even if, wow, Jaden Daniels got outplayed by Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams had his, like, welcome to the NFL star turn moment. Like, even if that didn't happen narratively, I still thought it was, like, an overwhelmingly positive outcome for the Bears, like, the whole operation.
I guess I want to know then, Danny, because I just want to have it on the record. What would a Caleb Williams coming out party in the way you're describing what Drake May did look like? How will we know that from your vantage point?
Like, did they win the game because of Caleb? Was he dominant? Was he by far the best quarterback on the field? Did he look like a superstar? Was he consistently great first quarter to fourth quarter? Like, I thought he was definitely better against Dallas than he was in this game. I thought he was arguably better against the Raiders. Like, I didn't think that that was just a game that I would throw the log on the fire of, like, I've seen Caleb Williams have that game. It was what is 17 plus 5. So that was his 22nd start as a Bear. Like, I feel like I've seen him play that exact game 6 times out of the 22 starts. Like, he was good, he had his moments, but I didn't think he was spectacular in any way. Did you think it was his coming out moment?
Oh, no. I'm under the belief that this is going to be a steady, slow burn, not some torrid, passionate love affair. It's going to be a nice, solid relationship with Caleb Williams and this team and this coach and this fan base. And at the end of the season, everyone will be in love.
So, that's interesting. I mean, because, like, if you zoom out, the numbers are pretty good. Right, it's like 11 touchdowns, 2 interceptions,
exactly.
Passer rating just under 100, completion percentage is still lower than you would like in the low 60s, winning record, 3 wins in a row, pacing for 4,000 yards, right? Like, it's so, yeah, I'm with you. Like, I think it's generally speaking trending in the right direction, and can he start stacking games and being consistent? But to be very clear, like, Jaden Daniels has been in an NFC title game, and Drake May is doing more with less right now. Like, I think most of us would take the Bears supporting cast over the Patriots supporting cast offensively, and Drake May has looked even better than Caleb has so far this year. So, you know, I think Caleb still has a ways to go, but is very clearly trending in the right direction.
Danny, there's also been a lot of discussion, I think, as you can imagine, especially from Bears fans, about two things that are outside of the win. One is the refereeing from Monday night. And then two was the conversation behind Troy Aikman's commentary talking about some of the throws that Caleb Williams either he thought might have been late to or he might have missed or some of the other opportunities. I want you to listen to what Ben Johnson had to say. This is from yesterday. Patrick Finley asked him about Aikman's commentary during the Monday Night Football broadcast.
I saw you said somewhere today that you caught a little bit of the TV copy of the second half. Did the tone of coming from the color analyst there surprise you?
Maybe I just had it on mute.
It sounded like you heard some of what they said.
Yeah. Listen, you want respect in this league, you got to go earn it. And so that's where we're at right now. We need to go earn that respect from not only the rest of the teams in the NFL, but everybody. So that's where we are.
For the record, he did make comments about it earlier, just not in that press conference. That was the follow-up, and I think Ben probably realized he needed to let off the gas pedal a little bit, but just saying he noted that Aikman was critical of Caleb Williams. What do you think?
I thought Aikman was critical of Caleb Williams. And I think that Ben Johnson is probably, it's not in his best interest to comment on all the Twitter stories, right? Because, like, that is a, and I saw that Caleb reposted something that was, like, seemingly making a reference to it. That's all well and good, and it's fine to be online. We all are, as long as you got the win. And listen, I do think that Caleb is hyper-scrutinized because he's been the number one prospect since he was in seventh grade, because he was a Heisman Trophy winner, because he was the number one pick, because Jaden Daniels outplayed him last year, like I mentioned, Drake May. Hell, Bo Nix outplayed him last year, because Caleb Williams is different, because he is a unique free spirit in some ways. I think a lot of things on this, but a very true and fair observation is if Caleb Williams would have thrown the interception that Jaden Daniels did and then smiled on the sidelines, and then he would have fumbled the ball late like Jaden Daniels did, shows like mine would have led with Caleb Williams. And yeah, we did not lead with Jaden Daniels in those items. Now, Jaden Daniels, the obvious response to that is, he was in the NFC Championship game last year. He won 9 one-score games last year. He won 12 games last year before the playoffs, right? Like, there's obvious reasons why they're talked about differently. But Caleb probably feels, correctly, that every move he makes is under a microscope, and he can, like, complete a pass on third down, and Troy Aikman could say, well, yeah, he completed a pass on third down, but it should have been for more, for yards after the catch. Like, damn, that's a pretty harsh grade for a guy making his 22nd start. And it is. And I have no idea why Aikman came in with that agenda. I tend to like the Aikman and Buck broadcast because Aikman doesn't pull punches, because he is opinionated. And so, like, the Bears were on the receiving end of some negative commentary from an analyst who is still willing to give negative commentary. And frankly, I love it, because not every color analyst is. And so, like, does it matter? No. But it's a good thing for fans to be pissed about in the moment and for us to talk about on talk radio. But, like, as long as Caleb has his fun with it the night after the game and then now is not thinking about it at all and is totally locked in on the Saints, like, I don't really care. And Ben Johnson, I thought, was smart to Finley's question to not, you don't want to make that a 3-day story. Like, you don't want Caleb to, Caleb will be asked about it today if he hasn't been already. But, like, you want that story to go away as quickly as possible.
I will say this, though. I thought that Aikman was looking at Caleb under the microscope of good to great. Like, there was a throw here he could have made if this had been a little bit more timed. I didn't necessarily see it as super negative, but you're right about the smiling after the interception and the fumble. I completely agree. I just think he thought, oh, there was also this option, and he said as much. That's how I interpret it.
And I don't think there was an agenda either, Danny. I think he was just saying, hey, Jaden Daniels is out here as an NFC Championship game participant while Caleb Williams has not had any measure of success in this league. And I understand he was saddled with Matt Eberflus and his coaching staff. But at the end of the day, fans can be upset all they want. The bottom line is Jaden Daniels has done more in his time as an NFL quarterback, and that's okay. He's got time to prove them wrong.
Yeah, well, we've seen this so many times. Right? We see it with, like, what quarterbacks get star calls, you know? And Collinsworth says it all the time. He's like, we're going to talk about this later in the broadcast. And, like, he says that all the time. And I'm like, well, I don't know, talk about it later in the broadcast if it's relevant based on the game in front of you, not because you thought about you were going to do it from your production meetings, right? So I do think these guys come in with their opinion from who they've talked to and the film that they watch and all of that. But I don't believe that, like, Troy Aikman has an agenda against Caleb Williams. I think that he is a color analyst of a number one team who is willing to be negative and is holding Caleb to a very high standard. And by and large, we should too. Like, I think Caleb Williams can win MVP in a Bears uniform. Like, I think Caleb Williams can win a Super Bowl in a Bears uniform. And I don't think Caleb Williams is particularly close to being the league MVP, nor do I think the Bears are particularly close to being a Super Bowl champion. So, like, until he gets to that level, we should grade him harshly. Like, I don't want to grade him like Mitch Trubisky against Tampa or Justin Fields against Miami. You know, like, I still want to hold Caleb to, like, the Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert strategy, because I think that's where his talent is. And so, you know, I have no problem with, hey, that was a 12-yard completion. It should have been 30 if it was a better ball. So I have no problem with that analysis because I don't want to lower my standards for Caleb Williams yet.
No, I think it's fair. And I feel like we're not talking about the NFC playoffs here. We're talking about them trying to win one score games. And yeah, there are a couple throws that I'm sure he would like back. But the good news is the plays were so good that there were multiple options to get yards and therefore points. And that's how I kind of felt about it.
Yeah, but I mean, but like the missed, the 2-point conversion, Aikman did a great job on the replay of showing that the running back was wide open in the flat. Caleb didn't see him.
Right.
Like maybe he was blocked by Darnell Wright, but like he did not make the throw and they did not convert the 2-point conversion. And that's on Caleb. And that's okay. Like that is objectively what happened. And it's true. And again, we who watch every play can like, and now obviously Aikman watched every play, but like we can look at a box score and be like, all right, 250 yards and a win. Not bad. And wow, if they would not have taken the Adunze touchdown off the board, and if Zacchaeus would have caught the ball, it would have been at least an extra touchdown for Caleb, if not two, and at least an extra 50 to 70 yards for Caleb, if not 100, right? Like, because literally Zacchaeus could have taken that ball 97 yards to the house. We don't know. So, like, we were two plays away from Caleb having a superstar game. And on the other side of it, you know, he was a little inconsistent. But they won. Like, what I said on TV after that game on Tuesday was, like, I thought it was a great Ben Johnson game. I thought it was a fine Caleb game. But also, guys, like, it was almost like a playoff game. Like, the Commanders are a wild card team. The Bears are trying to be a wild card team. The Bears now have the tiebreaker over the Commanders. Vegas has the Bears at, like, a little bit more than 2-1 to make the playoffs. They would have been closer to 4-1 to make the playoffs if they would have lost that game. Like, if you're 2-3 and you got three takeaways in that game and you were coming out of the bye and you lose a game where you're +3 in the turnover differential, that would have been a devastating loss. But instead, they figured out a way to win the game. Like, so did Caleb arrive? Are they a playoff team? What's with the narrative? Like, I'm interested in that too. I talk about it every day on the show, but like the truth is that like they just needed to win. Like they needed to win that game. And now they need to win the game against the Saints so that they have a little bit of breathing room when they play Lamar Jackson coming off a bye and the Baltimore Ravens. Like, you can the Bears legitimately can be 6-3 a month from now if they hold serve and beat the Saints, Giants, and Bengals and lose to the Ravens. And if they're 6-3 and the running game has arrived and Caleb Williams is taking that incremental progress that Marshall's talking about, like, they'll be even money or better to make the playoffs. And like, this season can get really exciting really fast. So I'm on Twitter like you guys are. I'm watching the game. I'm living and dying with it. I get caught up in all that stuff too. But like, I don't want to miss the forest through the trees here. Like, that was a huge win for the Bears. Like, period. And then everything else is secondary.
Agreed. Danny, thanks again for joining us. And thanks for being there.
We appreciate you, Danny. I'll try to be here next week.
You're going to be here next. When are we going to get Grody here? Like, doesn't Grody come on after me for a Bears report?
No, it's Wednesday.
Yeah, because this is the Caleb day. Like, Wednesday and Thursday, Grody is typically at Hallis.
It would take him having a Monday night football game.
Doesn't he give you a Bears report at, like, 1:25?
Not today, no. Because, like, they're not talking until later. So nothing was going to change between
Bears.
Between, like, then and now. If something had changed.
Like, let's four box it.
Like, said, like, let's four by. You really are in TV mode. I love it.
Yeah, man. Like, I'm in New York. You guys are in Chicago. Grody's in Lake Forest. Robbie could be on the moon, and we could all be on the show together.
Like, Ray Diaz says we can do this, and we will work on.
Yeah,
doing
let's
this.
Figure it out. I mean, I take suggestions.
I'm just saying one question. Can Grody show up for one question? Like, can like. Like, I talk to you guys from 1 to 1:15. Grody shows up from 1:15, says something dumb. He's gone by 1:16, and then it's back to us. You know what I'm saying? Like, he doesn't need to be here the whole time, but just like, I like to make fun of him a little.
You've been hanging out with too many television producers, but I like it.
No, good producing.
I'm an idea man.
You.
If FS1's Danny Parkins wants it, we're going to do it. We're going to make it happen.
That's right.
And I'm going to the moon.
Right. Yeah, how are you going to send Robbie to the moon?
I assume that's in the score budget, right? That won't be a problem.
Yeah, definitely not.
We got free food yesterday. That had to help us out somehow.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice. Well, I mean, listen, that is the thing about TV that is no different than radio. When there is free food around here, everyone's in a much better mood.
Hey.
A much, much better mood. But to get to buy, you know, if you buy lunch for a radio show, because I know like Layla with her deep pockets, I know she's buying lunches all the time. But like you got to buy for Marshall, Ray, and Robbie. If you want to buy for a TV show, good Lord. I wanted to get smoothies for everyone. It was like $250. It was insane.
So, it's New York pricing for you.
Good thing you're made of money. And
it's New York pricing, and it's that there are like 23 people that need to be employed to put on one of these things. It's crazy.
It is indeed. But Danny, we appreciate the time, and we'll get Robbie to the moon and let you know how it goes.
Thanks, Danny.
All right. See you guys.
Seemed very anticlimactic, the whole getting to the moon thing.
I mean, we'll figure it out,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
They did it on, you know, those Apollo missions with like a lot more work than it takes now.
True.
Yeah, that required a lot of...
If you believe in that sort of thing. I'm joking. I'm from Huntsville, Alabama, the home of Space Camp. Don't.
I wanted to go to Space Camp.
Planting a flag and it has a Giddy jersey on it. On the moon.
How would your main team feel about that?
How would Cade feel about that?
Don't tell them, okay? Keep it between us.
We got to figure this out. We got to do a better job of balancing this.
Next week.
Snitching would be putting the Giddy flag on the moon. You'd be snitching on yourself at that point.
Self-snitch.
Let's get back to what Jed Hoyer had to say. We need to clear up at least part of the discussion surrounding Shota Imanaga's possible free agency. So I'd like to do that, at least give you the information I have, and then get more into what just some of the finer points were of the discussion. I say we open up the phone lines if people want to call too, because I know we missed some people. So 312-644-6767. That's next on Rahimi Harrison Grody on the Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on the Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Rahimi Harrison Grody, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I believe in Jed. Stay with him a long time. I believe that he's going to put the best product out there for us. They gave us every chance to go win this year, and that's all you can ask for, and I know that that's their mission, you know, again next year, is to give us every possible chance to go out and win as many games as we possibly can.
That was Ian Happ. He was on with us earlier today here on Rahimi Harrison Grody on 670 The Score. If you missed it, you can go to the Rewind feature, check out the Odyssey app, and you can go back to 1025. In the meantime, Jed Hoyer spoke during the 11 o'clock hour, giving his end-of-season press conference, and we try to figure out what it means for the Cubs going next. Number one was the discussion surrounding Kyle Tucker, and when you heard what Jed had to say, I don't think they're going to be the ones to make the first offer. Let's take a listen.
When we were at our best, Kyle was at his best, and vice versa. You know, there's no question he had a huge impact on this team. Obviously, he had dealt with some injuries and struggled a bit in the second half. But I think when you take the totality of the season, he had a huge impact, as we hoped he would. Obviously now we're sort of into free agency, and we'll be talking to Casey, and we'll be having those conversations. And so, I mean, like I said a bunch of times during the season, like, everyone can use a guy like Kyle Tucker. Everyone gets better by having a player like that, and we'll certainly be having those conversations.
So my takeaway from this is we'll be circling the block, but not until after he circled the block, because he also said he's earned the right, you know, to be a free agent and to be a well-compensated free agent and all that stuff. So you're right. They're not going to fire the first salvo.
No. And what's funny is it's almost like they – you know how you would always say, like, make Josh Giddey sign an offer sheet?
Yes.
And the Bulls didn't do that?
Right.
I feel like the opposite is happening here. They want to see how much people are willing to pay him before they get into this. And here's my issue with that. You're never going to be the highest bidder. as long as the Mets exist, the Phillies, the Dodgers, the Giants, you're never going to be the highest bidder for him. Unless you suddenly change course from the entire history of your organization.
Well, but what did give me pause and maybe a little bit of hope if you're a Cubs fan is the fact that they understand that what they tried to do at the deadline after talking about starting pitching all the way up to the deadline did not work. And they realize it's a different environment now. That's not going to work. So it's got to be an off-season thing.
That was one of the bigger takeaways I had, too, from what Jed had to say was him acknowledging that the trade deadline market was so tight. And he said, I knew the market. I wonder how much of that is also defending the decision to go after Michael Soroka, because they said they knew that he dropped in velo and all this. And then we saw what happened. Exactly. And okay. And you still felt like you had to do something, but it unfortunately was the wrong decision. And his injury proved that point correct. So you didn't get the pitcher you wanted. You got the hitter you wanted, kind of, until he hurt his finger and we don't know how bad it was. You know, you talk about the second half of the season. Another team's going to get him healthy, likely for an entire season. So how much are you willing to see what the difference is on another team when you gave up Cam Smith, who just got nominated for Gold Glove, Isaac Paredes, who had an all-star season, and then Hayden Wisniewski?
The conversation, I believe, starts at $300 million. Now, for the amount of
years... starts at whatever the Mets want to pay him. That's what it starts at.
No, I'm saying the general conversation starts at $300 million. So I'm saying that to say this. Are the Cubs willing to pay Kyle Tucker $300 million straight up? And if they're not, they can exit the conversation.
That's it. And he's right. Like, he's earned the right to have that free agency and that courting period. And we're still trying to figure out how he's going to... He likely sets the market, too, this year.
Yeah,
that's the other part of that. You typically want to see who's setting the market. And I feel like he, even injured, he's still probably doing that. The better question becomes, are the big guys like Dodgers and the like, who I just mentioned, Phillies, et cetera, are they willing to spend less because of the CBA that might be impending? Because he didn't shy away from that either, Jed Hoyer. Did you notice that? That he acknowledged that in a way that lets you know that it is affecting their decisions.
He said the closer we get, what I thought was remarkable is he said the closer we get to it. I was like, well, you're not getting any closer to it than right now, because
there are a lot of unrestricted free agents on this team after the 2026 season. Nico Horner, for one. That's a big deal. You know, Justin Turner still due 10. I got to see what the numbers are. That's according to SpotRac. I think that's if they retain him. I'm pretty sure. So that's how I got to look at that. I knew he was 1 year for six, and then there was some sort of like option there. It's the Shota Imanaga contract that deserves the most discussion in all of this, because that's something that we had been trying to get a hold of information-wise for a while. We got parts of it, and then Patrick Mooney of The Athletic actually clarified it more deeply this morning. Now, what we understand is, at least what I was told initially, was that it's not just a club option. It was a club and a player option that then enacted other results. You have more information from the Mooney article this morning.
Well, it's a mutual option, as you said, and it's not as simple as, oh, if you don't want it, we'll do this. If you do want it, we'll do this. It's very layered. So here's the first layer.
It's one of the more... It's not that it's complicated. It's just that there's so many hinges to it that there was no way to say this without like taking some serious time. This is Raheem Harrison Grody on 670 The Score. And this is us trying to figure out what the heck is in Shota Imanaga's contract.
So I thought Patrick Mooney in The Athletic did a great job of laying this out. The Cubs have one half of that mutual option for next year. And by exercising their option, the Cubs can lock in Imanaga for the 26, 27, and 28 seasons at a total cost of $57.75 million. That's what the Cubs can do.
Total cost, meaning throughout the rest of the contract?
Right.
Because, for example, right now, like this year, Shota for 2026 is due 20 and a half. And that would be the case in 2027. In 2028, it was 17.25.
Right. So now if the Cubs decline that option, the one I just described for this $57.75 million over the next 3 years, he would gain, Imanaga, a $15.25 million player option for 2026. So if they'd say no to that, he can still opt in and say, I'll take that $15.25 million player option. He would also have another player option for 2027, meaning he would be guaranteed at minimum $30.5 million over the next two seasons. So you see what he can do if he decides he wants to opt in, but the Cubs do not opt in on the bigger portion, the 3 years.
The Cubs have to decide whether or not they want to pay him an average of $5 million over that time, more than what he would get if it's his decision.
Exactly. So now the Cubs could then instead make Imanaga a one-year qualifying offer worth slightly more than $22 million. And that move would tie his free agency to draft pick compensation and potentially limit his options. So he could go elsewhere, but they get stuff back.
Imanaga is 32 this year, is that correct? I need to look.
Shota Imanaga, as of right now, is 32 years, 1 month, and 14 days old.
Wow, I shorted him a month and 14 days. Sorry about that, Shota. Yeah, I knew he was 32. So I think that factors in as well in all of this is the age season.
All right, so there's one final scenario. This is the least likely of all things to happen. If Imanaga exercises his first player option, the Cubs then would then hold a two-year option for 2027 and 2028.
But would they have to accept both years at the same time, or would they be options each year?
I believe they're option 1 year at a time. The first one, 2027, $24.25 million, and 2028, which would be $18.25 million. You see how it would go down year after year.
Which makes sense, correlating to age.
Yes. So it's a very layered, nuanced contract, and it gives everybody options. And the Cubs, again, he could not be a Cub next season, and they could offer him that one-year qualifying offer and still give stuff back, at least in draft compensation, if he signs with someone else.
And it sounds like the Cubs would have to pay him to go away, too, which is not what you want. Like, you don't want, especially when that $15 million is a big deal to the Cubs.
If you know you're going to have to pay the $15, he's going to be on the roster. That's why I believe he will be on the roster next year. Now, is he going to be viewed as the same level starter as we saw at the start of this season? Maybe, maybe not, because, you know, they've got the pitching lab. They can fix things. I mean, he's a fly ball pitcher. We can't fix that. That's just the nature of what he does.
Well, they knew that going in.
And if his velocity is down, if his location is off, the balls fly out of the yard.
And what was surprising was Jed Hoyer wasn't – he talked about how good of a teammate he was and how much he likes having him with the organization. He said they were going to decide on this in the next couple of weeks. And for him to even say that much, I thought was pretty pointed. That made it sound like it might not be as automatic as one's thought. And if they're saying that they've got that much money to pay people to go away, then that might be a pretty good indicator that they have more money than we think they have.
I'm telling you, I really think that the difference is going to be the postseason success, having the games at Wrigley, plus understanding we can't do as much around the margins once the season starts as we could in seasons past. That's a reality.
Yeah, and when you look at who all is available, and again, I go by Spot Rack, but I know sometimes like they don't have all the details like that. You know, when you consider who comes off of the books based on the contracts and how they're constructed, there are quite a few players who this is their last official year under contract. Now, there's arbitration options with some of them. There's pre-arb with guys like Matt Shaw, which makes sense. But, like, it's pretty interesting to see who is no longer with the team according to these contracts after 2026. They have some real serious decisions they want to make as far as extensions are concerned. And you would get the indication that they might be doing this knowing that a stoppage is on the other side.
Cubs have been very clear. We don't want anything on the books that we can't control past 2026.
And if you think they're bad, look at how many contracts are signed after 2026 for the Baltimore Orioles.
None.
One.
Oh, is it one?
It's one.
Oh, is that a player they have team control over? Is that why?
Yeah, and I forget. It's one of the big name, like, younger players they've got. So, yeah.
They've been shedding.
It's scary. So, when you consider that, that kind of makes it all make a little more sense. We have more to come here on Raheemy Harrison Grody on 670 The Score. Now, we understand that the Pope may have chimed in on the baseball playoffs. I've said this before. I don't know that I can handle a Pope talking about Chicago sports. But people are yelling at him in parades and stuff. So let's take a listen to what Pope Leo had to say next.
Da Pope.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Listen to Raheemi Harrison Grody on the Odyssey and iHeartRadio apps.
Breaking news, the new Pope is from Chicago, my friend.
How about
Are you serious? Cardinal Prevost.
No. Are you serious? What?
The Pope is from Chicago?
Hit us with that breaking news.
We got a Pope!
That's right. We do have a Pope. His name is Pope Bob. They say it's Pope Leo. I don't know. Sounds like he might be into rainbow cone to me. And apparently, the Americans going to the Vatican and talking to Pope Leo about sports continues. There was that video we had to suss out whether or not he was truly wearing a White Sox hat, and indeed he was. And now there's more? What did you guys find, Ray and Robbie? Robbie Ray?
So I was on Twitter during one of her segments, you know, doing some research right there. I was really just scrolling. And then I saw
during one of our segments?
Yes.
And then I saw ignoring us, Robbie. Ignoring us.
How dare I? But I was going through and I saw this video of Pope Leo. And he said a very meatball-y thing, and Ray and I were like, this has to be AI.
For sure. We thought it was doctored. We thought there was no way in the world this is real. So then Robbie took the initiative as the good producer he is and did some research, looked a little deeper. What'd you find, Robbie?
So I went to Vatican News, their YouTube account, which is always live streaming what is happening at the Vatican. And this is a real audio piece. So I'm going to play it. It's going to be hard to hear. We'll go over it, but Pope Bob, he's an absolute meatball. So as you can hear right there, someone yells, "Go Cubs!" in the crowd, and he responds with, "They lost."
Wow.
Wow.
"Go Cubs," said the person in the crowd, and Pope Leo said, "Han perdido, they lost."
And said it in Spanish.
Spanish and English. He went bilingual on him for everyone to hear.
Do you remember the roughly 24 to 48 hour period after we learned that the Pope was from Chicago where we argued over whether or not he was a White Sox fan or a Cubs fan before we found the video of him actually at the White Sox World Series? And that's where we confirmed he was indeed a White Sox fan and not a Cubs fan.
It broke my heart, Marshall, because at Wrigley Field on the big board, they put that Pope Leo is a Cubs fan or he's a Cubs fan or something like that. And then hours later, it was rolled back.
Wasn't it on the marquee outside?
It was on the marquee. Yeah.
Also, I found out which person it was who declined his option for the White Sox. AJ Pollock declined a $13 million option with the White Sox to get the $5 million buyout instead. That's how much he didn't want to be on the team.
Can we believe we're in a world, though, where the Pope is clapping back at a fan saying, "Go Cubs"? He's that much of a meatball where he's saying, like we live in a world where he's clapping back. The Pope.
Where was he when AJ Pollock had the option?
The fact that the Pope knows who AJ Pollock is probably is hilarious, too.
There's a lot of people who suspect that the Pope is that he listened to The Score.
I'm sure he's a Bob, is he not?
He's a Bob from the South Side.
Yeah.
So I need him to go in the meatball machine. I need 100% just
the Pope called into the meatball machine.
We can't handle that as a society.
Hey there, Pope Bob here.
I think none of us should be shocked that any of these things have happened, though, because 2025, listen, if you had told me at the end of 2019, hey, things are about to change, I would have had no context for what you were talking about, but things have indeed changed since the end of 2019. They have changed majorly in so many different ways.
You don't have to tell me twice.
And I just want to reiterate that, like, also, as you bring it up, the age, you know, we are in 2025. This is the age of misinformation.
Disinformation.
The fact that this is one 1,000,000% real is wild.
Well, and the fact that we all keep checking if everything's AI regarding the Pope. We're like, oh, he's in a Sox hat. This has to be AI. Nope, it's real. Oh, he's trolling a fan of the crowd about the Cubs losing. This has to be AI. No, it's real. Turns out the fake would have been if he like said, oh, it's too bad. I really love the Cubs or something like that.
The AI game is so bizarre and strong that I saw a video of AI created of Tupac doing a foot race against Kobe Bryant. Like, what? There's so much weird, bizarre, fake stuff out there, but this is real. The Pope.
I will say this: AI, synthetic media, deep fakes. There's an excellent story, and I'm pretty sure it's on their YouTube page. Go to 60 Minutes, watch it. And if you don't have a primer, let this be your primer for how AI is going to make us question everything we see from here on out.
I still can't believe AJ Pauly gave up $13 million.
You're hung up on this.
I can believe it.
Pope Leo can't either.
No, I guarantee you Pope Leo can't either. That was a ridiculous amount of money to play right field for the Sox.
Do you think Pope Leo wakes up every day and like goes on his whatever sport app he uses to check sports, and he's like scoreboard watching? He's like, oh, Miguel Vargas had a good day, one for three.
What makes you think he doesn't have the Odyssey
Pope
app?
Sports app, sport app.
Well, like I use the ESPN app and I go there, and that's where I check on my teams. And it's like, oh, okay, Josh Giddey, he had a pretty good day.
Pope Leo strikes me as the guy that would have the MLB app direct, you know?
Or just God tells him.
847 says the Sox didn't want AJ Pollock either. It was AJ Pollock's option. How many times do we have to go over this?
It pains me that the Cubs lost, but I get joy out of hearing Pope Leo from Chicago scream it.
Because it's wild.
It's insane. It's amazing.
I'm also still laughing at like whatever Mike Tomlin press conference is going on this week. He's got some bangers this week. I know we didn't have time. Do we have time? We don't have time. Man, look up Mike Tomlin and see what he's been popping off about recently. It's pretty amusing. That's Marshall's favorite coach.
I don't know that he's my favorite coach.
Well, he coaches your favorite quarterback.
He's definitely not my favorite quarterback.
Whenever he's on McAfee, you always say, you got to tune in.
You know what? You guys are
on sport app.
Ridiculous. What I'm saying is I understand logically why Mike Tomlin, who's never had a losing season in his history of coaching almost two decades in the NFL, when paired with a quarterback who is former MVP, multi-time MVP, might just have something to say about going to the playoffs and having a very high ceiling. Some would even say a Super Bowl ceiling. It's me. I said it. They have a Super Bowl ceiling. You guys are going to, at some point, just apologize for doubting what I said. You are. You're going to be like, okay, I get it. He probably has a Super Bowl ceiling. You three aren't as bad as our fourth member, Mark Grody, who said they would win six games.
Better be praying to the Pope for that Super Bowl for the Steelers.
I'm not
praying. It's the only way you're going to get it.
I want the Bills to win the Super Bowl. I'm a lifelong, suffered through four straight Super Bowl losses Bills fan, okay? On the strength of House Ballard, product of Alabama A&M University. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about Mike Tomlin's a good coach. Aaron Rodgers is a future Hall of Famer. They're together now. That's just common logic.
I know that AJ Pollock still got paid.
Save your time.
The point is he could have gotten paid way more to just play outfield for the Sox. And he didn't want to do it.
Yes, because that would have been suffering.
Yes, 260 is correct. That was a huge diss of the Sox by AJ Pollock. And I bet the Pope knows about it. I bet I could talk to him about that.
We can talk with those other guys about it if you want.
Nah, we've been over it. Also, like, man, got to respect the boundaries, but that was wild. All right, let's do talk to the guys about something. Lawrence Holmes and Matt Spiegel coming up next.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.